Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 84, recorded Saturday, October 30th, 2010. This is the podcast giving the voice of the traveler. It's more about the journey than the destination. Two topics on this edition of the Travel Commons Podcast: end-of-the-year status calculus and TSA porn. Hey, well, this week, coming to you today from the Travel Commons studios outside of Chicago, Illinois, I gotta tell you, picking up the mic, I kind of felt like I was walking into a confessional. You know, sort of, bless me, Father, for I have sinned. It's been 6 months since my last podcast. Now, as I mentioned in the last episode back in May, I wanted to take the summer off to focus on the new job, which I did. Also wanted to do a little something with video, which I did. I posted a 6-minute summary of our summer trip to Vietnam. I put it up on the site. I think it was last month, complete with a bit of an Easter egg at the end. John Stalvern picked it up. He posted a question on the Travel Commons site. Is that an actual shot of the never before identified Mark Peacock at the end? Yeah, John, it is, complete with my newfound Vietnamese friend. I also rebuilt the Travel Commons site and put it back on my own hosting service, pulling it away from the boarding area site after they stopped paying me. Now, you know, not that I blame them. It's a tough economy, and their business model really has been, I think, to sell banner ads and click-through ads for blogs. And they never figured out how to monetize a podcast. As listeners know, I mean, this is much more about the podcast than it is the occasional blog posts. So, I mean, yeah, it was fine. It was understood. No problem. So I got a dump of my content, and I rebuilt my own Travel Commons site. So now travelcommons.com no longer redirects over to boarding area. It goes back to my site. And because it's my site, I've also got complete control. So actually, my son Andrew built me a new look and feel for the site. I uploaded like a better Twitter feed badge and put some other stuff, you know, kind of like polls and some other things on it when I get around to it. I also, in the interim, set up a Travel Commons fan page on Facebook. Now, quite honestly, I don't know what I'm going to do with it yet. I mean, right now it's a mix of some website content and some expanded Twitter posts. I don't know. Come by. There's a badge on the website. I'll also put a link in the show notes. Like it, I guess is the term. And I don't know. Leave any comments or suggestions you've got on the wall. Help me figure out what to do with it. I also have been doing a bit of travel over the past 6 months, as you would imagine. I mean, for those of you who've watched the Vietnam video, you saw our itinerary. I mean, we toured Vietnam for 12 days, and then we stopped off in Hong Kong for 3 days on the way back home. You know, my domestic travel has been a bit boring, mostly to our offices in Scottsdale and Dallas and Naples, Florida, though I have hit Boston and San Diego recently, and I've got a conference in Orlando coming up, so getting to some different places. You know, thinking back on my travel last year in 2009, I got to tell you, I kind of missed the trips to New York and San Francisco, but I'll tell you, as we officially hit autumn coming up here in Chicago, and when I got off the plane coming back from Scottsdale, coming back from Phoenix this week, it was like 45 degrees when I stepped out of O'Hare. I mean, it was 80 degrees when I went into the airport at Phoenix. So as we start to drop below the 50 degree mark here in the Midwest, and I can see December in Chicago quickly approaching, I'll tell you, places like Scottsdale and Naples, Florida are sounding, I don't know, pretty good again. Following up, I don't know where to start. It's been so long. Maybe at the most recent and work my way back. In-flight Wi-Fi. You know, in past episodes, I have said I'm not a big fan. You know, 35,000 feet is kind of my last refuge of non-connectedness. It's when I read or listen to music or listen to podcasts, really crank through my email inbox, you know, cleaning out that backlog of I'll read it when I get some time emails. On my last flight down to Fort Myers a couple of weeks ago, though, I broke down about 30 minutes into the flight and bought a Wi-Fi session from GoGo. I mean, the price was $9.95 for my iPad or my HP netbook, or $7.95 for my iPhone or Motorola Droid 2. I ended up ponying up the extra $2 to use a full keyboard, and while I cringed when signing on, it was useful not going dark for 2.5 hours. Right at that time, I was in the middle of a number of customer issues, and being able to run email saved me, you know, the inevitable 20-minute heads-down email session sitting outside the airport Starbucks, clearing out the 25 to 30 email messages that inevitably show up when I'm dark on a flight like that. I will tell you the rise in the near ubiquity of online storage and collaboration tools like Microsoft SharePoint has also made me push the GoGo in-flight purchase button a couple of times. I just can't tell you how many times I've clicked on an email message to start reviewing a document and found nothing but a SharePoint link. It reminds me yet again of that sort of mental gulf between office dwellers and road warriors. I mean, what? You're not on the network? You know, that is what I get whenever I ask someone to send me an actual file. I just hate SharePoint. Since I'm on a bit of a rant, I got rudely surprised a couple of months back while eating dinner at a restaurant in Scottsdale. I mean, we've talked across many episodes about dining solo in restaurants. I'll tell you, it's gotten much easier over the past 3 to 4 years. Really, it's a rare restaurant that won't serve you off the full menu at the bar. I mean, I've been to some places where, you know, they even have a little tray that sort of evens out the slant of the bar so your plate won't slip into your lap. So anyhow, I go into this restaurant, the Zinc Bistro, in the middle of one of the many shopping centers in Scottsdale. I was supposed to meet a buddy of mine for dinner, but he had to bail at the last minute. So when I walked in, I asked if I could eat at the bar. Well, of course, the hostess said, and I sat down. There was like one other guy at the bar. He was at one end, I'm at the other. I order a glass of wine, a frisée salad, a large order of charcuterie. I mean, it was a French place. I ordered a second glass of wine, and I pull out my iPad and just start flipping through the Financial Times app, just, you know, catching up on reading, stuff like that. A couple minutes later, an older guy introduced himself to me as the owner and then said, in a nice way, that computers weren't allowed in the restaurant after sundown because it spoiled the romantic atmosphere. Really? I mean, at first I thought he was joking. I mean, I looked around. The place was empty. It was a Wednesday night in summer, in Arizona. I mean, not exactly the height of tourist season. I counted less than 10 people in the place, none of which looked to be interested in a romantic atmosphere. Now, I could have gone and, you know, debated with the guy whether the iPad was truly a computer, but looking at him, I mean, anybody who would have thought to walk up and say this in the first place, trying to talk to them about the difference between an iPad and, you know, and a laptop, that was just going to be a waste of my breath. So I paid my bill, no tip, and told him I wouldn't be back. I mean, I always say, look, you can have an attitude or you can have my money, but you can't have both. I mean, this guy chose the attitude. So if you're ever in Scottsdale, Arizona, the Zinc Bistro, skip it. The food wasn't great and the attitude, absolutely lousy. All right, two negative rants. I need to balance them out with something positive here. One of the biggest surprises of my Vietnam trip was the near ubiquity of free, high-quality Wi-Fi. I mean, preparing for the trip, I didn't plan to use my iPhone much because of the high cost of roaming for mobile data and voice. I figured I kept the phone with me in case of emergency calls, and figured I might download some podcasts off Wi-Fi when I was in the hotel. But when I got there, I found Wi-Fi everywhere. I mean, almost every restaurant and bar seemed to have Wi-Fi, most of which were open. I mean, I'd stand on a street corner waiting for my wife to finish shopping, and I'd have strong signals from two or three different places. Now, you know, some restaurants did have their Wi-Fi locked with WPA or WEP encryption, but it was still free. You just had to ask your server for the password. Now, unlike in the U.S., where the Wi-Fi is unencrypted, but you hit a portal of some sort where you got to log in to actually get real live internet access, in these restaurants in, you know, sort of Saigon or Hoi An, the session was encrypted. So once I put the password into my iPhone, all the over-the-air transmission was encrypted, which, you know, given the recent emergence of things like FireSheep, which, you know, lets someone hijack people's Twitter or Facebook accounts over unencrypted Wi-Fi, yeah, the Vietnamese approach seems pretty good. Well, once we figured out the program, I mean, the kids and I would be whipping out our devices whenever I'd stop for a beer, which, I'll tell you, given the heat and humidity in June, was pretty often. And we'd ask for the Wi-Fi key while placing our drink orders. And usually they'd point to a sign on the wall or bring us a little slip of paper. However, at one restaurant, Pho 24, I think, in the backpacker district of Saigon, the waiter pointed to the little plastic stand-up menu holder. We looked at it and looked back at him. Then he pointed at the base of the menu holder, which said, "Cisco, this is the power of the network." "Oh, that's the key?" "Yep," he said. I thought, well, that's one pretty secure key. Hey, if you've got a question, a story, a comment, a travel tip, the voice of the traveler, send it along. The email address, comments, COMMENTS at travelcommons.com, or you can send a Twitter message to M. Peacock, or you can post them on the new fan page on Facebook, or always at the website at travelcommons.com. So the first topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is end-of-the-year status calculus. Hey, last week, USA Today had an article about the importance of status to frequent flyers. Of course, the USA Today being the official newspaper of frequent travelers, you would figure that that would be a page one article. I mean, it was a good article, and there's a link in the show notes and on the Facebook page, because October is the time every year that frequent travelers take stock of where they are in their various award programs and figure out how they're going to distribute their remaining travel to maximize their status. Now, I mean, status has become more important in the past few years as airlines have become more aggressive with add-on fees, the silver, gold, platinum, premier cards that exempt their holders from things like baggage fees or added charges for good seats have real monetary value. I mean, checking a bag and getting an aisle seat in the front of the plane can easily cost, you know, sort of $50 to $75 a trip without status. I mean, the calculus can be even stronger with hotels. Sort of precious metal cards can get you free breakfast and free wireless, you know, for those places that still charge for wireless, saving you, I don't know, $120 over a week's stay. I mean, you can build a pretty solid business case pretty quick if you need one more trip to earn status. But how to spread that status? I mean, is it better to spread it around, be mid-tier status with a couple of airlines and hotels, or should you double down and just go for one and go for top tier? It depends on what you want and how you travel. I mean, if upgrades are important, flying first class, getting bumped to a suite, then you need to go for top-tier status. I mean, as airline seat utilization goes up, the latest figures that just came out this past month are over 80%. So you figure that on average, on the average flight, 80% of all the seats are taken. I mean, there are way fewer first-class seats available. I mean, my United flight down to Phoenix this week was completely full. And a premier guy standing next to me, which is United's lowest level of status, he said he was number 52 on the upgrade list. Now, with 24 seats in first class on that 757, which is a big first class nowadays, he knew he wasn't getting out of seat 13E. But at least his status got him into Economy Plus for free. Otherwise, that extra 5 inches of legroom would have cost him somewhere between $25 and $50. Now, if you use your miles like I do, my Chicago to Saigon flights were on miles, and I just booked Chicago to Venice flights for next spring, the answer isn't as straightforward. As airline load factors and hotel occupancy levels improve, award availability is absolutely the first thing to go. I mean, award trips dropped over 10% between 2008 and 2009 as airlines took capacity out of the system as they grounded airplanes. Now, if you've doubled down and you've got all your miles or all your points with one airline and one hotel, your ability to use those miles and points when and where you want can be tough. My spring trip to Venice is a perfect example. The dates, based on my daughter's spring break, were inflexible, as was the location. My daughter has always wanted to visit Venice and Verona. Now, I knew this was going to be tough. So I gritted my teeth, mixed myself a nice cocktail, and started dialing awards desks. American could get me over the Atlantic, but they couldn't get me back. BA couldn't get me to Heathrow, but they could get me from Heathrow to Venice. Eventually, United could get me over on Lufthansa via Frankfurt, and then back on a double hop, Lufthansa to Munich, Munich to Heathrow, and then United from Heathrow to O'Hare. Now, if I'd focused my miles solely on American, I would have been out of luck, or pulling out the charge card, whichever's worse. Okay, nice bit of theory, but what have I done in October? Well, a little of both, really. I mean, starting the year, taking a new job, my destinations where I was traveling to changed, and United and Marriott, where I had top-tier status, they were no longer the most convenient choices for where I needed to go. So I ended up switching to American and Hilton, because for me, they were the most convenient to get me from point A to point B and get me a place to sleep near the office. And, you know, planes and hotels, you know, for me, are means to an end rather than the end in and of itself. And that's typically the way it is with business travel. Now, being in Chicago with O'Hare's dual hub, and indeed you could say if you expanded to Midway, you could say it's a tri-hub, Southwest being hubbed out of Midway and American and United hubbed out of O'Hare, I still ended up putting some miles on United just based on a more convenient schedule when I was going out to, say, like Seattle or something like that. But I still ended up putting most of the miles on American. Until this month. So when I tumbled the numbers at the beginning of October, I looked at it and I did not think I was going to hit Executive Platinum. I just was going to come up just shy of 100,000 miles that I needed for Exec Platinum. So what I've done now is pivoted most of my trips over to United so that I can lock in at least some status, premier status, kind of the entry-level status. On hotels, though, I went deep on Hilton because they were everywhere I needed to be. I hit gold early on, which gave me free breakfast and free Wi-Fi, and looks like I'll end up hitting top-tier diamond by the end of the year. So while strategizing to get early boarding and a free scoop of scrambled eggs may seem pathetic to the occasional traveler, think about the efforts that you expend to get that close-in parking space or a good subway seat or sneak up the exit ramp on the freeway into the office. And remember, at least my scrambled eggs are coming with a free trip to Venice. The second topic on today's Travel Comments podcast is TSA porn. Okay, let's start off by stipulating a well-known fact. I am not a big fan of the TSA. Now, nothing earth-shattering here. I think I've been pretty frank over the past 5 years and 83 episodes of this podcast and in many add-on blog posts. And I don't think I'm alone. While there'll always be some once-a-year flyer who'll pop up in front of a reporter's microphone saying, "I don't care how long I wait, I just want to be safe," I don't know any frequent flyer who defends the TSA. We've just seen too much of them. And while we see the occasional good deed, recently saw a TSA screener in Fort Myers who was helpfully prompting the older passengers to pull their toiletries out of their carry-on before they pushed their bags into the x-ray machine, it's much more common to see TSA screeners berating flyers, screaming and yelling at them at the other end of the machine, why, challenging them why they didn't remember to take stuff out. Or you end up seeing about a half a dozen of them standing around around a closed machine. I don't know, trading traveler stories, chatting it up while the rest of us flyers are stewing in this 15-minute line. But the most frustrating thing is, 9 years after the September 11th attacks that caused the TSA to be created, every new thing the TSA does seems to make things worse and more intrusive. I mean, the rollout of these full-body scanners, and if you look at my tweet stream, I have just been livid about this. It's just an example of both. You know, take shoes and everything metal off, belts, watches, jewelry, and stand in the machine with your arms above your head holding your wallet for 5 seconds, then wait another 5 to 10 seconds for the all clear, and then go collect your belongings and then get dressed again. And to think that, you know, sort of 5 years ago, I would rail on this podcast about the inconvenience of taking my shoes off before a 1 second walk through the metal detector. An invasive? Look, I'm not a prude, but when a TSA screener beats one of his coworkers with a baton because after a training session with a full body scanner, the rest of his coworkers were joking him about his small manhood, I'll tell you, I'm not buying the TSA's lines about privacy filters. And I'll tell you, the TSA isn't using much discretion either. I mean, there have been articles about screeners coercing a pregnant woman into accepting a scan or pulling a 12-year-old girl out of line for a full scan through one of these things, and this after the UK government has forbidden the use of full-body scanners on anyone under 18 because the pictures can violate child pornography laws. Give me a break. And now, this week, it just gets better. The TSA announced on its website that it's implementing new pat-down procedures. Okay, pretty innocuous. But what it doesn't say is that these enhanced procedures will involve the screener running their hand up the inside of your leg. Okay, now that's not as invasive as the pat-down I once got in Amsterdam a few years back, where the screener sort of cupped my manhood. There, that word again. But it's close, and the TSA, these TSA pat-downs are going to be a lot more frequent. It just makes me wonder why, after 9 years and hundreds of millions of dollars, all the TSA can say, if they're really honest with themselves, you know, sort of in the quiet of those viewing rooms of the full-body scanning pictures, all they can really say is that all they've accomplished is to make the lives of their main constituents, the travelers, more miserable with each improvement that they claim. It's amazing. But I don't know. Perhaps I've gone too far. They have improved the lives of one group of people, IRS employees. The IRS employees are no longer the most reviled group of government employees. Okay, that's it. That's the end of Travel Commons Podcast number 84. I hope you enjoy the podcast, and I appreciate you staying subscribed through my 6-month vacation. There's a new source of bridge music with this episode, the CC Mixter website. It's a little beat heavy, but it was fun. Spunk by Love Shadow, Bored on Your Backside by Trifonic, and Bogey Beat Budapest, or should I say Budapest for those Hungarian speakers, by Karma Hacker. I'll post links in the show notes. Hey, if you've got a story, thought, comment, gripe, the voice of the traveler, send them along, text or audio file to comments, comments at travelcommons.com, or to M. Peacock on Twitter, or write them on the Travel Commons wall on Facebook, or post them on our website at travelcommons.com, or all of the above. Oh my God, how many different ways can you interact with Travel Commons? Hey, thanks to everyone, though, who has taken the time to send in emails, tweets, post comments on the website. And I will tell you this, that it will not be another 6 months until I do the next podcast. I've got some thoughts, already writing up the next episode. So until I talk to you guys in November, take care, travel safe, and thanks for stopping by the Travel Commons. Bye now. We'll be right back.
off his heel. Strange bed in a lonely motel. But one thing can ease my mind, the warm woman that I left behind. From California to Carolina, she calls me up and there's nothing finer. And when the tears start falling,